very fascinating sugya. And again, through a little Pesach on this daf, we are entering into major, major topics in both the concept of Nezikin and in the actual application of Nezikin. It's hard to imagine real life cases that are not going to draw in one way or another on some of the yesodos that emerge from here. And we're taking advantage of the opportunity to consider other sugyas at the same time. I was in a conversation yesterday with some of the Rebbeim who were talking about the second semester, they're going to switch to another parak or not, and the like, and talking about how, you know, the second parak is a very important parak, but so many of the sugyas overlap that it's hard to just start from there fresh when we're seeing so much of it through the first parak. That's essentially the way things go, so we're trying to do that kind of mindfully as well. So what we saw yesterday is a discussion of what happens when we're sleeping. And we're not trying to overemphasize the status of sleeping and all of its implications and all of its inconvenient timings and the like. But it happens to be not only relevant to itself, but relevant to a lot of other things. So the Gemara says that a person is mu'ad when they are asleep, because they stretch out, they toss and turn. So many have noted the Shita Mekubetzes, which I put on the Makoros. Shita Mekubetzes, to figure out just how significant it is, but is too dais on what we mean that the person is mu'ad. Is the person mu'ad because Adam mu'ad to go to sleep next to stuff? Is that what we're saying? In which case, you have to figure out why that's significant. Because are we saying that the Adam is mu'ad to be careless? Is that the point? That Adam is mu'ad to put himself in situations where he's likely to harm other people's property? Or is that closer to Adam Hamazik in the active sense? And we have to figure out just exactly how to categorize the different things, the different ways in which people cause harm. I don't mean to be anti-humanist here or sound like one of the people who would say the world is better off without people on it. We're very pro-people. But nonetheless, there are certain responsibilities that come with being a person. We're pro that as well. So where exactly are we identifying the liability here, the ha'adah here? Are we saying that because a person is likely to put himself in the situation? Or is it really like the second day in the Shita Mekubetzes, that a person who is asleep is no longer consciously dictating his actions, but he is likely to move around, he's likely to toss and turn, and therefore one should kind of view that like he would view his ox, just like he knows that he's not trying to hurt anyone, but if he doesn't take active care of his ox and keep him away from china shops, so there's likely to be a problem that's going to be traced back to him. So too, if you don't take active care not to lie down next to something delicate and expensive, so then you're also going to bear a responsibility for that. Maury?
Can we consider that's like an active passive kind of feeling, that one of it's just because a person is
yeah, I'm not.
This person sleeping is careless, and he won't be able to prevent himself from damaging. And then the other one is like sort of dark and leila fahazi.
I'm not sure how much emphasis to put on it. You know, the first one seems to be saying that a person's dangerous quality is that they tend to do things that are careless. That's what it sounds like. If people tend to go to sleep next to these vulnerable items. But it seems it's a little more likely that the second interpretation is really what we're talking about, that since a person in a sleeping state can do damage, and that's normal, so therefore that puts an achrayas, darkam lahazik ushmiras and alecha, right? That's the other part of the sentence, that in a state of nature this is dangerous, so therefore you're responsible to do something about it. Hi.
But I feel like most of the Rishonim I've seen so so far, sort of focus on the two-person situation, where you're asleep, and let's say, you know, your friend or whatever sleeps next to you, and you turn over and hit the person. So, you know, which model does that fit into?
Okay, so the two-person situation, though, is a chiddush yet, because the Gemara doesn't mention it yet here. Right? So when you enter that into the equation, what we need to figure out is, why does that make a difference, bringing a second person into the equation? So that's one of the major issues that surrounds this Tosfos over here, which brings in the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi seems to be taken for a given, seems to be authoritative and quoted in Shulchan Aruch and quoted by all the other Rishonim. So essentially that seems to be a part of the fundamental discussion here, that the premise of the Yerushalmi is accepted, that this is not necessarily saying that the person would be chayiv even if he innocently went to sleep in a completely sterile environment and somebody introduced something vulnerable into that environment while he was asleep, there wouldn't be a chiyuv there. That premise of the Yerushalmi seems to be taken as a given. The question is, why is that true? What is there about that that makes that a significant difference? So here we see that there are two other places to look, and maybe we should look more carefully at the place where we started, because the Tosfos itself gives us a clue, and we have to figure out how this Tosfos is going to shtim with one of the other places that also are relevant here. So one is Tosfos later on, Tosfos on Daf Chosayin. Right, so what was Tosfos' position over there, essentially? That the idea that a person is chayiv ba'ones, that's not absolute. And that we have to categorize ones based on its salient details. So there is an ones that is absolute, that is itself absolute, and that we would call, let's say, ones kein gneva. If somebody comes up to you in the street and puts a gun to your head, or if somebody breaks in past all your defenses, that's a little bit, we talk about gneva, and they take your item, so, okay, that's an ones. But that's different from an ones kein aveda, an ones where you lost something. So you didn't mean to lose it, but perhaps you could have been more responsible. So like we said yesterday, it means basically four categories of activities here. There is somebody who could choose to be mazik something intentionally. There is somebody who could be mazik b'shogeg, meaning he did something, didn't mean to harm anything, but he caused a harm through his actions. And then there are people who didn't do anything, and it just happened to them, but there's still two categories. It happened to them in a way that was really unavoidable, or it happened to them, but they could have... I always think about all my childhood excuses why I lost my coat or my textbook, and here I'm maintaining it's an onus, what do you want from me? And yet, the implication is always I could have done more. You know, onus kein aveda is a different onus than onus kein gneva. You know, that we feel like if you lost something, you could have been more careful. Hi.
Those four categories are intentionally mazik, mazik shogeg, mazik that's unavoidable.
Right. So that's like 1, 2, and 4. What you just said. I also mentioned them in that order, but in terms of level of liability or level of blame, basically. And so when you do something on purpose, that's clearly most your fault. When you do something b'shogeg, okay, that was b'shogeg, but still you're the one who did it, and we have to figure out how to assign that. But then there's two other categories where you didn't do anything. It happened to you. It was imposed on you externally. So we'll call that onus. But within that, there's two categories. There's onus where it was really... So skip the last one, onus where it was really completely unavoidable. So you're overwhelmed by the onus. And... category before that, let's say an onus where you didn't ask for this and it happened against your will, but you probably could have done something to be more responsible. That's onus kein aveda. Hi.
So are there definitive ways to categorize whether it was King Naveda or King Gineva?
Not necessarily. We'll see. Well, because this is the subject of a lot of analysis, what is in one or the other. Hi.
And Shogi, we say you're 5 minutes of Shogi, right?
So that also, I want to get into a little more detail about, but presumably, yes. Presumably, it should be chayiv in the proper categories. But we will see some of the details here. So that's Tosfos's position later on. The Ramban, in a comment on Daf Pei Beis and Bav Metzia, so the Ramban quotes that Tosfos and dismisses it, because the Ramban basically works with the premise that Adam is always essentially chayev. So then what happens to the Yerushalmi? Why is the Yerushalmi different? So Yerushalmi is different because the victim, so to speak, the Nizak, was complicit. Because he did something to endanger his own stuff. Now that's going to be, all of this is going to be significant in terms of figuring out the parameters of Hezek done while sleeping, and again, nobody wants to minimize the implications of sleeping and its effects on the world, but that's still a somewhat localized topic. Right? There's a much bigger yesod that's coming out of this issue that affects every case, or could affect every case, whether or not you are awake or asleep. And that's something we're really going to have to try to look into in more detail. So what am I getting at? What's the bigger yesod behind this whole issue? You know, what's really emerging from this question? There's a central issue here of who is to blame when things happen. And what if two people are to blame? And one is to blame either more than the other, or one is to blame more recently than the other? Does that matter? Right, so you could ask, let's say, four questions. Right? Does it matter if there's more than one person to blame? And if so, do we look at who is more to blame than the other? Third, do we focus on who is most recently to blame? Not necessarily more so than the other, but they had the last opportunity to stop the problem from happening, and therefore we should focus on that. Or is there another element that enters into this equation? Like, can you figure out what else might possibly may be relevant? Say, in this whole dynamic, right, where we say, like the Ramban says, that it's different because the guy put his kelim there, it's his fault. So maybe it's his fault because he came last. Maybe it's his fault because he's got a bigger part in the story. Or maybe there's a third element to focus on here. What else might be particularly relevant? Any thoughts? What else could be particularly important in this equation? Yes, Sammy?
Maybe the fact that no matter what, both sides are on the board of the world.
Okay, but then why does the second guy get in more trouble than the first guy?
Can you repeat the question?
Let's say in this scenario, right, so what Tosfos says, quoting from Yerushalmi, what the Yerushalmi says, is that normally I go to sleep next to a Ming vase and I toss and turn and I destroy it, I'm in trouble. The fact that I'm asleep doesn't help me. It's my fault. However, if I went to sleep first and the guy whose Ming vase it is comes and puts it there and I toss and turn and break it, it's his problem. So why is it his problem? So is it his problem because it was more his fault than mine? Because I really had no idea this was there and then he put it right next to a sleeping guy? Is it his fault because he's the most recent person? So there's a chain of events, but maybe we look at whoever was the last one who could have stopped this, and we blame it on him. Because if he had not done what he did, or if he had done differently, this wouldn't have happened. Or is there a third element that might be relevant in this case? What's the possible third element? Maybe it's specifically in this scenario because he is the Nizak. Maybe the first and foremost responsibility towards protecting an item goes to the owner of the item. And if he is not doing his job, that gets our attention more than any other factor. So it's not assigned equally. You follow the possibility here that maybe if you have two people who are both contributing to something getting damaged, but one of them is the Nizak, maybe it's always his fault first. That the primary responsibility to protect an item goes on him. And if he didn't do what he should be doing, it doesn't matter whether he was 5% of the issue or 95% of the issue, or he came first, he came last, that gets the mazik off the hook. Alright.
Was there any difference on where this took place? You know, like, if it's in a Rosh Hashanah mazik, then... Or, I mean, I'm saying, I feel like it's making more sense if it's in Rosh Hashanah, let's say, where it's really hard to establish, you know, who had right away, but like it's just Harav, so technically I guess the Nizak did, but like would it make a difference if it was in my house versus like I bring an object to your house versus you came to my house and you adapt to my object?
We don't know yet that this makes a difference in this case, where we have these svaras in other situations. There are elements in which it's going to make a difference, so we'll see when we talk about some of the practical cases that there are factors that affect how a person's basic responsibility for himself are governed. So we talked about yesterday, for example, we alluded to the sugya of mazik bershus. Right, and maybe we'll try to get this into a Hanukkah topic because since it's so tied into this, we probably want to discuss it sooner rather than later. But it comes up in the context of Purim also even more so. But what does mazik bershus mean? What does bershus mean? So bershus, as I mentioned yesterday, it could mean two things. It could mean that there is a greater responsibility on the Nizak, like we're emphasizing in this sentence, to be aware of what's happening. Or it could mean that anything that's normal, so then we can't hold the mazik to the same degree of liability. If people are going about their lives in a understandable, excusable way, so then we can't blame them, like we saw as possibly the element when it comes to Shein Bershus HaRabim. If you're bringing your cow into the public area where you're allowed to bring it, then you can't be expected to be liable for when it acts normally. So if a human being is going about his life in a way that is completely legitimate and expected, then maybe there's a patur there also. So, for example, we'll discuss, and we'll give you some stuff to look about this tomorrow, that the idea of Ein Adam Misbonin Bedrachim, that the idea that a person is not considered to be responsible to, as he walks down the street, to keep his eyes on the ground, setting aside any issues of anivus or sneus or the like, or other reasons to look down, but a person is not considered liable to be inspecting the ground that he walks on, to make sure that there's nothing he steps on. So why is that significant? It seems like even when we say Adamu Ba'olam, there's still some degree of normalcy where things are simply not your fault when you're living life in a legitimate, regular fashion. Chad, I think you had a question before it?
I was just going to say that I thought that the idea that the Nizak is the first one who's responsible was consistent with something that the concept by, I think, a Shomer, mm-hmm. that if the the Baal is standing there. Like, isn't there a concept that the Baal is there at the time that it
Shmira
happens?
Babylon?
That's even the person borrowing it is putter if the Baal was there, like just to watch or standing there.
Are you referring to Baal Avimo, which is a little bit of a complicated concept, but may...
I'm not sure.
Okay, it may have some relevance. We can see if we can come to that. But what it also maybe is consistent with, if you mentioned the first day when we talked about what the Chi of Nezikin is. Right? So one of the questions we asked is the Chi of Nezikin tied into some Avera? Is it tied into the idea that you did something wrong? In terms of kind of transgression, and that's why there is a Chi of? Or should we say more simply that basically whenever anything breaks, somebody has bad luck? I don't mean that superstitiously. I mean that when an item loses its value, so somebody gets stuck with the loss. So normally it's the owner. And that's the default situation. If somebody's property gets damaged, they're the ones who take a hit. But the Chiddush HaTorah is that if it's your fault that that guy's property took a hit, then it's your loss. So once you say like that, maybe it makes sense to say we start off with the premise that any property damage is the bad luck of the owner. But if there's a reason to blame it on a third party, so then it becomes his bad luck. But if there's also a reason to blame it on the owner himself, then it goes back to the default position that essentially that's the chazaka, so to speak. The chazaka is always that the loss happens to the owner and he has to try to recoup it from someone else. So if it's somebody else's fault, then he can recoup it. But if it's also his fault, then that carries disparate weight. And it's more his fault, no matter how much it actually was his fault, because a part of it is the opening premise that his stuff is his problem. And if he wasn't responsible towards his stuff, that has an outsized impact here. Marietta?
We could say that even if we're not saying like the run, like
maybe. Yeah. So we have to see. So maybe that is a key element here. Maybe even without the Ramban, maybe it's a key element. So one issue, and we're going to definitely continue this a lot tomorrow, but one issue that the Svarim notice, as I said, okay, look at Tosfos and Chavzayin, and look at the Ramban and Bav Metzia. But what about Tosfos in front of us? Right? The Tosfos in front of us is not completely silent on this issue. So what does Tosfos here say? Say, after quoting the Yerushalmi, it does say something, right? Potter, why? Dehaim Garmu Lo. So who does that sound like? Sounds like the Ramban, right? It sounds like Tosfos is talking about this contributory negligence idea. Or maybe more than contributory. The Lashon of Garmu sounds like it's a soul problem with somebody else. So there is some attention, maybe not as much attention as you'd expect, but there is some attention paid to this Tosfos. Tosfos sounds like he's not siding on his own team. Right? Tosfos can sometimes contradict each other, it's not impossible, but sounds like Tosfos is taking the side of the Ramban rather than Tosfos later on. Now, in the Kovetz Biurim of Rabbi Chanan, I don't know if any of you guys have, there's a new fancy Rabbi Chanan out on Bava Kamma. You seen that?
Standalone
Bava Kamma. You know, so for many decades, we used the Rabbi Chanan on the two-volume Kovetz Shiurim. The comment is always made that it's like you're parking a driveway and you're driving a parkway. So for the Sfarim of Rabbi Chanan, we have the Kovetz Ha'aris and the Kovetz Shiurim. The Kovetz Ha'aris on Yavamas and the two-volume black Kovetz Shiurim. So it's like the parkway and the driveway, because the Kovetz Ha'aris are really very elaborate, intricate Shiurim. And the Kovetz Shiurim are really Ha'aris, really short little Ha'aris for the most part. So I don't know if there's a Hezbara behind the names, but they're seemingly switched. So the Kovetz Aris Nivam is a very elaborate sefer. And on all the other Masechtas, he has much shorter comments. But for some reason, that's called the Kovetz Shirim. So in the Kovetz, so the sefer they came out, I think within the past year, is a sefer on Bava Kama, which collects his comments from various places and puts them in order of the whole Masechta, and has pretty extensive footnotes. So he has there a comment from Rabbi Chanan that Adam Hamazik is Chayiv even Ba'onas Gomer. And he says it citing this Tosfos on Daf Dalet. Doesn't say anything more than that. So in the footnotes, they work to explain. Says, where's Rabbi Chanan getting this from? That our Tosfos says that even Onas Gomer, you're Chayiv. Does anybody want to hazard a suggestion? So where do you think, so what are the footnotes?
Tosfos on Dalet?
Yeah, Tosfos on Dalet. This Tosfos, our four-line Tosfos, says Rabbi Chanan, oh, you see from here that Adam and Mazik is Chayiv in Onas Gomer. So the footnotes over there, how do you think he explains it? Right, so therefore what? So how does that help us?
Any time that they cause it, even though it wasn't that they directed it, even Grumma.
Okay, or we say more that because there's another party to blame. That's the issue. It sounds like if you're the only one to blame here, then you're chayiv no matter what. I think that's what Rabbi Chanan is getting at. That this is essentially not, Nachanami is not trying to be miyashiv the theory here, that this Tosfos is in contradiction to the Tosfos later on in the Masechta, and that this is in accordance with the Ramban, but that by having to say Heim Garmulo, so then he's telling you that you're chayiv no matter what, unless there's somebody else to blame. Now, not everyone reads it that way, and not everyone assumes that this Tosfos is in contradiction to the later Tosfos. So there is a sefer, it's an older sefer called Kova Yeshua.
Kova Yeshua?
Kova Yeshua, yeah. Yeah, basically, the Hat of Redemption. You can find it on HebrewBooks.org, so if you want to look it up. And it is quoted in a number of the contemporary Svarim, including this footnote refers to it as well. And it's quoted in a few other places also, in the Sefer Adam HaMazik, that Sefer mentioned in the past about Halach L'maisa issues in the Zikin. He also quotes the Sefer. Again, you can look it up on HebrewBooks.org. He's got one paragraph on this Tosfos. But it's the Sefer is on Bava Kama directly. Kova Yeshua. So commenting on this Tosfos, he doesn't assume that this Tosfos disagrees with the later Tosfos. But it's still worth mentioning here because it accounts for the Ramban too. It's essentially, you don't have to say, like Rabbi Chanan seemed to be implying, that there's never an excuse for the Adam HaMazik if he's the only one involved. But it's still a bigger chiddush here, so it's worth mentioning that even according to the Ramban, in a view like that, that if there's somebody else who is involved, then that's going to change things significantly. So this is relevant to one of the Hechitimses that we mentioned yesterday. We'll just try to get these two in. There's still a lot more to say, so God willing, we'll finish this tomorrow. But both the Kovi Yeshua discusses, and also Shlomo Zalman discusses. There's as well a sefer, I'm pretty sure it was available in the Sfarim sale last year. I think the Rabbi Chanan sefer was also available there. But the sefer Menachas Shlomo on Bava Kama. So I think that was taken from his other Sfarim, but Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's comments on Bava Kama also organized Alpi Seder Hadaf. So on that sefer, he's got a little bit about the chiyuv of a yashin or the p'tur of a yashin from different things. And he also focuses on this Garmulo and he says the same point, that this is to tell you that even if you would ordinarily be mechayev adam hamazik in all cases, but if there is some other involvement, then that's going to be very significant. So he uses it to address the situation of what happens if the person who's sleeping wakes up in the middle and he sees that something has been left there. So when he went to sleep, it wasn't there. But in the middle, he woke up and he saw it there. Does that change things? So Reb Shlomo Zalman writes that based on this, he says, no, it doesn't change things. Because the emphasis of this Tosfos over here is not that the person was completely blameless. Because then you could ask, if the whole point is, what do you want from him? He went to sleep, it wasn't there, and it was put there when he was flat out unconscious. So what do you want from the guy? So then you could say, well, okay, but he had a chance. He woke up in the middle and he saw it. That's what we want from the guy. So according to Reb Shlomo Zalman, based on this toast, he says, no, the ikkar is not that it wasn't there when he went to sleep. That's part of it. But the ikkar is that it was somebody else who put it there. So that guy is liable, even though the sleeping guy woke up and saw it there in the middle. Now, personally, I'd like to be sympathetic to that position also, because the thought that people who happen to wake up in the middle of the night are expected to have full responsibility and consciousness is kind of a dangerous path to go down. So, personally, I have rahmanis for this guy. That I think we're opening quite a door by saying that you become responsible for things that you can't differentiate from dreams. So it's already kind of a tricky path, but basically for other reasons, that's what Reb Shlomo Zalman says, that in that scenario, it's not going to be different if the guy wakes up in the middle, because Tosfos is telling you, Haim Garmulo. So this is an interesting debate, whether this Tosfos is at odds with his teammate later on in the Masechta, is he aligning with the Ramban? Or, as others say, maybe not necessarily, but he's saying that in this case, it's worth mentioning, because even if one were to take a tighter view against a person's personal liability, but when there's somebody else involved, that's a game changer. Sam? Okay, so these are issues which, again, like I said, are going to have major implications way beyond the issue of sleep. It's also relevant, the issue of whether it has to be the Nizak who put the Kalim there, or could it be anybody who put the Kalim there? It's a huge nafkamina lahalacha, because this could affect all kinds of scenarios. So the Rambam's lashon, you see the Rambam in Hilchos Chov Lamazik on this, is on the list, right? What does the Rambam's language suggest? He doesn't have the language of Kalav. Right? He doesn't have the language that it's the Nizak who put his stuff there. So it sounds like he's not emphasizing a Nizakian responsibility. In others, not so clear. So this puts us on the edge of the major meta issue that comes out of this, which we will, God willing, focus on in more detail tomorrow. And how do you assign the blame, being that just about everything in life has multiple factors that bring it about? So it's very rare that you'll have a hezek situation that's not going to have a couple of places to point blame. So when that is the case, how do you actually land? It's an extremely relevant question, so we will consider tomorrow further implications of what this Tosfos is getting at. All right, to wish everyone a wonderful day. You should stay dry and stay warm and stay safe and don't be mazik anything.
God willing.